This is Sports Quarter, a look at the international sports scene.
Hello and welcome to the Sports Quarter, where we discuss the sports events from all over the world. And I am Sid Patke. I am the host. I am a COO at Infogen Labs that sponsors the Sports Quarter. I have with me our guest, Jen Azevedo. She is a sports director at the Paseo Club, which is one of the premier, or I would say the only tennis club in Santa Clarita. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Oh, it's a privilege to have you here. So she herself is known to be a very good coach around this area in tennis. And today we are going to discuss the French Open and Wimbledon that just concluded, that Djokovic won his 19th and 20th to equal the other two greats of the game, Federer and Nadal. So with that, let's jump in and start discussing the French Open. Was that expected or was that a little shock result?
I mean, I think to me, anytime you've got the big three headed to a major, you sort of expect them to go all the way, you know, yeah, but, and to be battling it out somewhere. And
the way Nadal had started playing French Open, even before, I mean, the last French Open was just 7-8 months ago, which was delayed like in September. And that was like a straight easy win for Nadal over Djokovic. I mean, not even close. And that's what, and he won big tournaments like Rome and I guess Madrid before coming into French Open.
Yeah, I mean, I think watching Rafa take the tune-ups, you know, anytime you see him on clay, it's hard not to predict that he's gonna go all the way. But I just, anytime you have a big three playing in the last 15 years, I mean, the nice thing is, you know, most of the time you're going to get some fantastic tennis. And that was definitely what happened in that semifinal.
Oh, yeah. But even when the match started with Nadal and Djokovic in the semifinal, Nadal was 5-0 up. And I thought this was just a repeat of last year's final. And he was going to run all the way and finish it in the 2 hours.
Right.
Something changed after that 5-0. What was that, you think?
I mean, I think Rafa came out just all cylinders firing. You know, he couldn't miss there in the beginning. He was just incredible. And once he came back down to earth and Djokovic had the chance to start swinging through balls, you know, it turned into a great match. I think the funnest thing was being able to watch what the other pros had to say watching it. You know, you have somebody like Andy Roddick saying, This is the greatest tennis,
extremely,
you know, and it's extremely, not like a slouch.
Yeah, extremely physical tennis. I mean, it was just tiring watching them. I mean,
right? It was exhausting to watch them.
It was just four sets match, but it was more tiring probably for Djokovic than even five setters with the final, in the final that he played with Tsitsipas.
I think so too.
Djokovic has kind of taken physical fitness to another level in last 5-6 years. One thing I think that helps Djokovic against Nadal, because what's Nadal's strong point on clay? Why has he won 13? Is because of the topspin, the ball after bouncing goes to your head. Like, you know, at that level, at that height, hitting it back is hard. That's how he wins.
Right. With Djokovic, it's hard to be aggressive.
With Djokovic's,
swing from your forehead.
Yeah, with Djokovic's physical fitness, I think he gets that half a step extra and gets to the ball closer before it bounces to your shoulder height. And that's how he can get it into that golden zone. And that's mm-hmm. where I think that's where he beat Nadal.
I think that tiebreak, you know, in the third, I mean, I think that's the epitome of exactly what you just said, you know, the physicality that Djokovic brings to the game now.
Yeah.
Because Nadal was epic, perfect, exceptional tennis in that tiebreak, you know? And I think that's the kind of tiebreak we're going to talk about years from now as just the absolute ultimate in clay, best of the best, you know, in their prime.
And that missed volley in the tiebreak, you know, that's the easy put away that he missed. That flew out, and I guess that's where he lost that set. And once he lost that set, I think Nadal knew, because the fourth set he was completely, Djokovic just completely outplayed him.
Yes, yeah. I think once that set was done and that tiebreak was over, and he knew that was really the pinnacle of his play. You know, that was Rafa being Rafa 100%. And when that didn't work out for him, I think there was definitely defeat just in that set, knowing you still had another one to play, but it didn't matter.
Yeah, with that volley, he kind of squandered it away. That flew out.
Right.
So, and Djokovic's previous matches with Musetti and who was it? Berrettini, I think. They were pretty physical too before he came into the semifinal. So Nadal had comparatively easier matches in the previous matches. So, and then again, the final, Djokovic was down love two. Tsitsipas was up two sets. And that's the physicality. And that's where he beats most of the players, that they cannot compete with him over five sets.
Right. But I think Djokovic he's really pioneered a whole nother level of what cross-training means and what flexibility and stretching. And, you know, I mean, you'll see the guy, you know, walking around and he is always stretching. And so what that flexibility, that being limber, even well into your 30s, you know, it's just beyond what anyone else has ever done. And I think it's really showcased in that kind of perception. You know, you have somebody like Tsitsipas who had 12 errors in two sets.
Yeah.
And Djokovic was okay, just kind of biding his time and waiting. And once he was able to swing through the ball a little bit more, those last three sets, you know, once he had one of them, it was kind of just an inevitable.
Yep. That's what makes him great, but we'll get to that later. So for now, we'll just take a break with discussing French Open. After the break, we'll come back, discuss Wimbledon. All right, keep watching the Sports Quarter.
This podcast is proudly supported by InfoGen Labs. At InfoGen, we believe that cricket is the perfect balance of teamwork and talent. This is what you can expect from InfoGen when you engage us to solve your technical needs. From Salesforce to security, web to mobile applications, we'll be beside you helping you win, because that's how we win. For more, please visit us at InfoGenLabs.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Sports Quarter, where we discuss sports events around the world in 15 minutes. Before the break, we discussed Djokovic's 19th Grand Slam, which was the French Open win. And now we're going to discuss Wimbledon. And I have with me here Jen Azevedo, who is the director of the Paseo Club, which is a premier tennis club in Santa Clarita. So, Jen, only fourth man to win Wimbledon right after French Open in the same year, Djokovic again, to equal 20th Grand Slam with the other two greats. What do you think? Again, was that expected that Djokovic would win Wimbledon?
I think that's a lot less expected, but I mean, when you put it into perspective, you have 3 weeks. If you make it all the way in the French Open, you step off that clay court and you've got 3 weeks to transition yourself into grass, is pretty incredible. You know, the other majors have so much more space and you have time to adapt, and there's something really incredible and unique about going from such different surfaces with the clay and the grass. There's a reason there have only been four, you know? I mean, that's an incredible feat.
Yeah, I mean, it's done by only four men in the past. Rod Laver, then Borg. Borg actually did it more than once, I think. And then Rafa in that epic match in 2008, I think, when you won
French,
and then that epic match at Wimbledon against Federer, the best ever match.
In the dark, and and especially for somebody like Rafa, that, you know, that topspin is such an important component.
Yeah.
What an incredible thing to do, you know, and then you look at Djokovic, it's just crazy.
Yeah, so completely different sets of surfaces. On clay, you get more topspin. On grass, the ball skids more. But I think Wimbledon win was much more expected for Djokovic because of his physicality and the court coverage. I think the only thing was whether all the French Open efforts and all the hard, tough matches there, would they have taken any toll on his body? That was the only question. But other than that, I think Wimbledon win for Djokovic was much more expected than at French.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see him taking that, you know, short of someone like Fed getting in his way. That was, you know, there was a sense of inevitability once he got through the first few rounds.
Right. Here too, Berrettini still took the first set. It was kind of not because Berrettini was playing better. Djokovic was steady, but I think it's just a kind of momentary lapses of focus and concentration that cost him that set. But then once he came back, I think that was a pretty straightforward.
I think the same thing. That first set, he was a little tight. He had, what, three double faults in his first two service games? You know, that never happens to him.
Yep.
So there may have been a little sense of the occasion there.
I mean, talking of Wimbledon, one aspect that Djokovic has really worked on his game, other than the physicality, is his service.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, remember his service back from 2006, 7, 8? Like,
was not a weapon, that's for sure.
Yeah, and now I think he worked on it somewhere around 2010, 11, something changed, and he worked on his game, and this decade was Djokovic's decade. Let's get into this. We were going to take a break, but let's continue with this discussion of the GOAT. I think with age on his side and with every Grand Slam win twice in his career, I think Djokovic is going to be the GOAT in another probably couple of years. He'll probably add 3 or 4 more at least to reach about 24, 25 maybe before he retires.
He could start pushing Margaret Court, you know, for the all-time record. There's a chance. Because, like you said, the physicality that he's brought to the game, you know, and to him, I mean, he said plenty of times in the last few years, age is just a number. And when you're as physically fit and, you know, the fuel he puts in his body and the sleep and the stretch and the, I mean, he takes every component to the nth degree. And I don't think there's any reason that he couldn't squeak out several more.
What do you think about Federer? Is he done?
I hope not.
I hope not too. But the last set, I actually watched the last set. I mean, Bagel to Federer at Wimbledon, who would have thought, like, even a couple of years ago?
Right.
So, but I think with those two knee surgeries, and I think we need to kind of accept that reality.
Yeah, we may have to prepare ourselves. I know. Yeah. And now out of the Olympics, and it might be getting close to time to say goodbye. But
yeah, so
I mean, those three have been so incredible for so long.
Yeah,
it's hard to imagine a world that they're not still competing.
Yeah, Federer has never had injuries like with what Nadal had and what Djokovic had. Federer has pretty injury-free career because he's so fluent. He's like a poetry in motion. And that's why, That's why he has remained injury free. But I think at 40, I don't think he'll be able to cope with those injuries now to compete with the younger crowd. And of course, these other two greats, the Djokovic and Nadal. So, I mean, from that point of view, I think Djokovic is a mix of both of them, the Federer and Nadal. He brings the easy motion around the court, not as graceful as Federer, but I think he... and then he brings the physicality of Rafa. I think that's a great mixture into that. And with that, he has winning record against both of them.
He does now. And I think, I mean, ultimately, he will be able to be the GOAT because of the other two. You know, I think what they have each brought to each other's games in the last decade and a half.
Yes.
You know, if the other two didn't exist, he probably wouldn't be as stand apart as he is. Because the mental toughness that they've gotten from playing each other over the last years and the realization that, you know, for him, that second serve, he was never going to be the best with the second serve that he was holding on to in the early 2000s. And I think you put all those pieces together and each one of them owes the other two a huge component of their success. But at this point, you know, with him taking the physical component so far and so much of his life being spent that way, I don't know that you can't, even if you don't like him, you know, plenty of people don't like him, but I don't think you can keep him out of that conversation ever again.
Yep. I think, of course, you know, that's a good point you made, that they kept pushing each other and especially Djokovic. I mean, I remember a quote from Djokovic back in 2007 or 8, something like that. He was born in a wrong era because there were Federer and Nadal at that time. They were beating him all the time. And I thought, hey, you are a pro. You shouldn't be making such statement. And
right.
You know, that's what I guess something changed in that 2010. And from 2011, he just brought his game to their level and he has been beating them since then.
But I think what changed is a lot of that mental, you know, playing against Roger, playing against Rafa forced him to really adapt his mental toughness. You know, early year Djokovic, you know, it was like, oh, a hangnail, I can't keep playing. And I think that was when plenty of people started to not really care for him. He was kind of a bad boy. But he knew, you know what, if you're a top-notch elite tennis player, I mean, even if you're a great lower-level player, you have to believe that you're the best one on the court when you walk out there.
Yep.
So he had to transform that mental state to not ever think, it's not my fault, it's just the wrong era.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, he's in interviews, he stresses a lot on his meditation techniques that helps him play the ball and not the opponent, play the ball, not the score, just stick with that ball and forget the score, forget who you're playing, forget all other anything that's outside the court, and just focus on that moment. That's what he has mastered now.
And that's something at any level. You know, if you're playing tennis, that's a beautiful reminder for anyone. You don't need to play the moment. You don't need to play your opponent. Play the ball that's in front of you.
Yep.
Because that's the only thing that's going to get in your way.
And that has gotten him to this longest number of weeks as number one, like probably 20 or 30 weeks more than Federer now, which is like...
A few years ago, you never would have seen coming.
Yep. And he's still going strong. I mean, he'll definitely add at least 50 more weeks to that number one. So probably he'll get to like 400 weeks. So I mean, both of us, I think that he's going to be the GOAT in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun debate to have. But I think given 19 and 20 happening in such spectacular fashion, like they just did, and only 3 weeks apart from each other, it's it's pretty difficult not to at least have a lot of backing in that theory.
What do you think? Calendar Grand Slam for him? He'll get the U.S. Open too?
Could be. I know, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
He already has a Joker Slam, so not a calendar slam, but he has won four in a row, which no other player after Rod Laver has done.
Right. So yeah, and that alone puts you in the conversation for the GOAT.
Yep.
You know, just having a Joker Slam is above and beyond.
Yep. So we'll discuss when U.S. Open happens in end of August, I think, or September, or yep. Early September.
Early September, yeah. So, early September, we'll have to circle back.
Yep. So we'll do this again. It was fun to have you. Thank you very much, Jen.
Thank you. This is a blast.
Keep watching the Sports Quarter. Thank you.
Absolutely.